weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Johnny's and Afric. It's Friday, the 26th of April, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, it's another huge weekend of sport. I'll be joined by Jane Mangan, Shane McGrath, Brendan Devaney, Alan Cawley, and Fergal Brennan to preview it all. Plus, it's been a successful week for our Olympic and Paralympic hopefuls. Coming up shortly in gymnastics, we'll bring you Reese McLennigan's latest medal attempt at the European Championships. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. Alan Cawley is with me in studio, and just behind Alan on the TV is the Pommel Horse European Championships. Reese McLennigan will be defending his title in just a little while. I'm keeping an eye on it, and as soon as he takes to the stage, we will be bringing you commentary from it. Hopefully he will be able to do that. He is second from last up, so there's a few to go yet. Alan, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. How are you?
Yeah, good. Busy weekend coming. Looking forward to it.
I thought you were going to say I'm going to be up on the pommel horse now in 20 minutes.
I think you might be past your pommel horse prime somehow.
My pommel horse days are long gone, Marie, let me tell you. But it's actually, to be fair, looking at them, it's so hard it looks.
It's so hard.
Doesn't it?
The fella that was just on there fell. He didn't fall. He did something wrong in his routine and he lost all his momentum and he had to come off it basically, and it was the tiniest little thing,
because it's all just their upper body strength, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's incredible,
and their hand movements, and it's amazing.
It is amazing. Even to watch it's amazing.
The best in the world with Reese McLennigan, so hopefully he will defend that title. So what are you looking forward to this weekend?
Busy weekend as always, Marie. Obviously we're counting down towards the end of the Premier League, which we'll discuss later on, off the back of more drama this week with Liverpool now effectively gone. I'm looking forward to most. I think Willie Mullins being crowned. Ruby gave me a bit of stick during the week for not mentioning it last week, but I think it's some achievement, Marie, for him to win the Trainers' Championship, obviously in Britain, will be phenomenal. And just to see that happen tomorrow, which it should happen, a couple of hot favourites as well, which should just kind of confirm that tomorrow. It's the end of the National Hunt season, obviously over there. We've Punchestown here next week, but I think that will be one hell of an achievement from such a classy individual. I'm a big fan of Willie Mullins.
Well, Jane Mangan will be on towards the end of the programme as well, so she will set up the weekend ahead and she'll be mentioning that, and of course the Jockeys' Championship as well. So it's a big weekend for many sports, but one of them that all eyes will be on will be the Ireland women's rugby team. So they're going to finish their Six Nations campaign against Scotland in Belfast tomorrow. Everyone is hoping that they can bounce back from that real harrowing defeat to England last weekend. There is a lot on the line for them though, and if they manage to secure that third place finish, they will qualify for the World Cup, which was their aim at the start of this championship. So hopefully they will be able to put a performance in and also qualify for the World Cup. But they do have to see how Italy and Wales get on, because how they finish will determine how Ireland do overall, and that game will be well over as well before Ireland kick off, so no doubt they will know the result going into that. Well, yesterday was the captain's run and Edel McMahon was speaking after it.
Absolutely. I do think we want to prove that we've got grit and determination, we're rootless, and put that game behind us against England and show the world that we've put that behind us, and we're after that World Cup qualification. And our home crowds have been amazing, even in Cork and the RDS, we can really hear them, and it'll be an extra man on the pitch for us.
So if you want to tune into that, do watch RTE2 tomorrow, and also tune in to RTE Radio 1 Saturday Sports. We'll bring live commentary of that. So Alan, we now know that the interim manager of Ireland for the next couple of games is going to be John O'Shea.
Big surprise there, Marie. Big surprise. Caught us all off guard. It's just, I suppose, as a result, as we know, of this protracted search for a manager that just seems never-ending. So disappointing as well. But John is obviously in charge for those couple of games. I'm not sure what you think, and I'd love to know what the listeners think. But off the back of obviously Stephen leaving and them not having someone lined up, and then there was the names being bandied about the potential candidates, and then John O'Shea's name was kind of thrown into the mix as a potential manager. Now everybody will point to his lack of experience, but I almost think the fact that he was in the mix to be I don't know if he was ever a serious candidate, but his name was certainly being bandied about as a potential successor. And then after those two games that he did take, I almost think it's an insult now to him just to give him another two games almost.
You think that he should just be offered the job now?
And it's a case of him, no, not that he should be offered a job, it's him a case of saying you're either going to be the manager mm-hmm. or you're not going to be the manager, but you're not going to be the fella who just steps in almost like the water boy just to be doing the two games for the sake of doing them, because he's a very, very credible candidate in my eyes.
Yeah, well, you would have to think that there's conversations going on behind the scenes and that there's a formal application process in there from him now, because he did well in the last in his last spell as interim manager. He's two games, Hungary and Portugal, coming up in June. And
oh, I don't think there is, Marie. I don't think he's getting it at all. And that's my point. Off the back of, if he was ever going to get it, it was off the back of maybe those two games.
Yeah. Can I take you back now just a few months to the Ireland women's manager's job mm-hmm. when nobody thought Eileen Gleeson was getting it, and she stepped in and she did well, and for months nobody thought she was a candidate or a contender. Nobody thought she was in the process.
So do you still think he has a chance?
Well, there's precedent there where you think that the interim manager isn't in the process and that there isn't a formal application gone in, and then they get the job. So I think he's still in the process. They've done this before.
Now maybe I'm wrong, and from what I'm hearing, I think from John's point of view, it's good for a CV that he's obviously standing in, and obviously it'll go on a CV that he's managed for, it'll be four games now when he's finished. But I just think when there was people suggesting, and there was, and myself included, I even said it one of the nights, that I'd have no qualms because of the names that are on the list. I'd have no qualms with John getting the job permanently off the back of those two friendlies. For to ask him to stand in for another two friendlies, I do think it's an insult to him. Because he is such stature in the game and he's a credible candidate in my eyes, and he should basically go to Mark Hanum and say, if you're not thinking of me as the next manager, as a serious candidate, well then forget about it, I'm not doing those couple of games. Now I know John will say, as he said himself, I think he posted something on Instagram, it's an honour to represent your country and all the things that he's done over the years and to manage his country. But I think if you're serious about it, you either say, give me the job or else get somebody else. But don't have me as the water boy in between a couple of games. It was all right for the last two, but now because you've made such a mess of not having someone in permanent lined up, don't ask me to fill in again in June for another couple of Mickey Mouse friendlies.
Yeah, look, you can't speak, really, we can't speak on it because we don't know the ins and outs, but you obviously know a little bit more than I do, or I assumed he would have put in an application now and be in a process, but you...
I don't think so, no. I think he's...
You have a few, probably, people connected to...
He's not getting it.
Okay, well, Alan Cawley knows is basically what I'm getting at here, and I thought maybe he had applied for the job, but doesn't look like it will be him then. Okay, let's move on and talk to Shane McGrath, because I mentioned that there's a few big hurling matches coming up as well. Shane, how are you feeling about the weekend?
Yeah, look forward to Marie. Another weekend, Munster Championship. Good games in Leinster as well. Leinster is coming along nicely there now. They had a draw last week. Mm, two big guns playing each other this week, albeit I think Kilkenny are down some of their, you know, their big guns. So it's hard to know what way to gauge that, because I feel Galway are stronger going into it as a team. Kenny missing a few big lads. I also think, you know, Antrim are stronger this week. They're at home. So, you know, it might be the foregone conclusion that people are thinking maybe Wexford are going to win. So, yeah, I think all in all, we should have a few crackers at the weekend, Marie.
Shane, I know you're a big soccer fan and we've had many discussions about this. Yes or no, I'm not going to eat into your hurling time, but yes or no, would you have any qualms about John O'Shea taking over?
No.
There you go. And Shane's a good soccer man.
But you said he's not taking over, so
that's what I'm saying. So if he's not, don't give him the two Mickey Mouse friendlies now again.
My knowledge would be very, very minimal compared to yours, Alan. But say, if you're looking at it from kind of a more casual kind of fan like that, where he has been personally in his career, what he knows, what it takes to win, what he knows how to take create a culture of winners, whether that takes one, two, or whatever years, but he knows what a culture of winning is about. He knows that sometimes lads need to be told a few home truths, and maybe he also knows that if we don't have the players now, you know, creating that culture will help them become more competitive. Again, my knowledge is very minimal, clear as yours, Alan, but I just think he ticks a lot of the boxes. Mm. I mean, beggars can't be choosers either, can they, Alan, really? We're not the most appealing team in the world to be taken on, so if someone with John O'Shea's credentials and CV says, I'd like to give it a go, imagine, you know, even the context he'd have for developing a backroom team. Coaches, you know, sports psychologists, these kind of people. I'm sure he has made some great contacts down through the years, what he's seen. So I think he'd be a good manager, yeah.
Come on, Shane.
Alan's thrilled. I never said I didn't think he'd be good.
Like, oh no, I know that. I know that.
I do think he would be good, but I'm kind of.
Well, I just think because it's such a mess. But anyway, sorry, I'm eating into the hurdle.
We're getting sidetracked here now. Sorry. And also the pommel horse is on in the background. So there's a lot going on here at the moment. Shane, let's get straight into Clare and Cork. I didn't think that we'd be in this situation, being honest, that we'd be looking at the two teams both having suffered first round defeats and it being such a crucial game. But it is. How do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, I suppose a big capitulation by your boys down in Ennis last week, Marie. Obviously, you know, it goes from absolute euphoria to an absolute catastrophe. It's different times of year, but it's almost reminiscent of, remember, 94 with the Limerick hurlers losing the final to Offaly. And I think everybody at minute 53 thought it was a done deal. I think you're 9 points up. Even Tony Kelly comes on and you're still 5 points up. But from minute 53 to the end, Clare get outscored 3-6 to 3 points, and like even at club level, that's just not acceptable. And even the way he set up for the goal, so I'm sure, look, there was a lot of home truths told maybe on Tuesday night when they got back together, or on Monday or Tuesday night. And you know, even the way they were setting up, the way they leaked the goals, these things, obviously there was a bit of luck in the first goal Limerick got, but I mean the way the other two goals were got, I mean defensively the setup was all over the place. So I think mentally, Marie, it's a hard one to come back from. Great. But if you look back over at Clare the last 2 years, and even you only have to go back to last year, there is a good bounce in them after maybe a poor first game. So like say EG last year, Tip putting 5 goals past them in Ennis, and they go on then and they give one of their best performances of the year, turning over Limerick inside in the Gaelic grounds. So I do feel the players are there to do it. And I do think they have the right guys on the field right now to do it. I don't think, even looking at your team, you know, I don't think there's any changes. Like, you know, Tony Kelly is still on the bench, obviously. Whether he'll start or not, hard to know. But I still think that Clare are a better hurling team than Cork. And I do feel that they will win down in Cork. Like, I mean, it's time now for Pat Ryan, while the likes of the older guard have served him so well, you know, and even Pat Horgan is starting Sunday. Like, Pat Horgan made his debut. I remember he came on against us in 2008. And like, that's 16 years ago now. He's still going. He's one of the all-time greats for Cork. But I mean, it's time for change. And to be fair to Pat Ryan, Marie, he's made 6 changes for the Waterford game. He's nearly changed half his team. Like, Niall O'Leary's in, Owen Downey's in, Tim O'Mahony's in the backs, Ethan Toomey's on, Decky Dalton and Brian Hayes. And I suppose these lads they've done it underage with Cork at under-20 level. They've won All-Irelands. And I suppose now is the time to just say, here you go, lads. Here's your chance now. And that's what Pat Ryan is doing. And I suppose damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I feel he's done the right thing. He's given these guys a chance now. And, you know, maybe some of the older stalwarts they're not starting there this weekend. And I think that's what's needed for Cork. But a roundabout way to say, I still think Clare are first of all, a better hurling team than Waterford. And I think that there is a good bounce in them after a loss. So even the matchups around the field, like, you know, Alan Connolly, the marking Conor Cleary, that'll be a big test for him now, marking Conor Cleary. Shane O'Donnell will be marking Owen Downey. Again, that'd be a big test for Owen Downey. Even Kieran Joyce marking Mark Rogers. Like, will he sit? Will he go with Mark Rogers? I think Mark Rogers will have a point to prove himself personally after the last day. So I just think that Clare, I don't think it's the end of the world that they lost the first game. Yeah, it's very disappointing and mentally it's tough. But I just think that there will be a good bounce from there at the weekend. Like,
so the other big one in Munster is Tipperary and Limerick. Are you confident, Shane, that Tipperary could topple them, just even given how poor they played for 53 minutes in that Clare game?
Yeah, I like during the week I could probably tell you how the pommel horse was going to go as quick as I could tell you what the Tipperary team was going to be, because genuinely none of us knew. Like we didn't know. We knew maybe 3-4 lads of the regular guys, but you know the team has been named, and you know it looks, you know, we've got a good team. We've got a good team on paper, and we're strong, very physically strong, especially in our half back line, as in trying to match up to the like that leader line, as I call it, for Limerick, like with Tom Morrissey, you know, Keane Lynch should be there, if Gerard Hegarty's there. Like we've set up very physically, very strong with the half back line we've gone with Mikey Breen, Brian O'Mara.
Shane, I think I might have to interrupt you now because Reese McLennan is going to hop up on this pommel horse now. We'll be back to you soon though, but we're crossing over to Italy as Reese McLennan bids to defend his gold European champion.
Consecutive world. and the reigning champion of Europe as well.
Very clean start. This is pommel horse taken to the maximum. The Vendischvings, three of them on one pommel. The Vendischving is very, very important to him and his difficulty in this routine. We see it again here, this time between the pommels, and he's not done yet. Right there, traveling Vendischvings. And back down the pommel, right into Vendischvings at the end of the horse. It's so difficult.
Well, that's just majestic, isn't it? From Rhys McLennigan, the world champion, and the gentleman in search of yet another European title. He packs his routine with so much exquisitely performed gymnastics. You watch him and you are, as always, enthralled.
Throw him a challenge and watch him rise to it. That has been the story of his career over the past few years. He started out very well. The scissor mount. And he has just delivered with these Vendischvings. Often we watch to see if there's going to be a leg form break. But this routine was solid, befitting of the two-time world champion.
I defer to the words of Rosemarie Jenkinson, who wrote a poem for Poetry Day Ireland called Pommel Horse for Rhys McLennigan. He slaps the horse's hide into plumes of white flowery chalk as his hands pirouette on the smallest stage, his skin patting the leather until he grips the pommels and feet pointed like a ballerina in the air. He spins, scissors, spindles and flares, and he has gone into the gold medal position. She didn't write that last line, but Rhys McLennigan has just written his place into the record books again. 15.3. Apologies to Rosemarie Jenkinson for ruining her poem with my inadequate words after it, but he's captured attention in Ireland, hasn't he, Rhys McLennigan? There's poems written about him, he goes to schools all the time, he's got a big trophy cabinet. Philip Boudet is going to finish off...
Absolutely fantastic. There were no experts, Alan Cawley, but he really looked like he was, as they said, there, majestic, executing his routine perfectly.
How slick was that? If Tipperary performed anything like he just performed on the pommel horse, they'll annihilate Limerick Shane.
I tell you what, I've been told shut up loads of times in my life or stop talking, one reason or I've never been told to stop talking because of a pommel horse, but fair play to him. He's
exceptional, Shane. Exceptional.
Yeah, serious joke, yeah.
We're going to be going back in a few minutes because the way this works is that every competitor has to go, and then if Rhys is still in front at the end, then he is crowned champion. He wins the European title. So this last competitor is just finishing up now. So we're going to return to Italy to get the final stages of commentary and hopefully confirmation that Rhys McLennigan is the European champion.
The final performance in this pommel horse final is from Filip Udej of Croatia. The gentleman who has now taken up a governance role as a sporting director of his local club, but he still goes out there and produces top quality work on the apparatus. He won a silver medal at his home World Cup in Osijek in Croatia for the first time in a long while recently. Seemed to have a bit of a battle at the dismount.
Just a bit of fatigue. But really, for him, over the past few years, there have been numerous occasions where he has been poised to win a medal, and he has almost gotten through the routine and had a little mistake somewhere and come off. There's been more than one heartbreak for him in major finals, but not in this one. Just a little hesitation in the hips going up to the handstand, but... overall, really well done for Filip Udej.
My sport children from 2014, 10 years ago, in Virginia, in the
guaranteed medals. Rhys McLennigan and Lauren Demunk waiting to see where he finishes. Marios Jurgiu, Filip Ude needs 14.8 plus to get onto the podium. He may win the difficulty tiebreak if it comes down to that.
Suspense?
Well, that's just made the highlight reel of the championships, hasn't it? Close, very close. 14.533 for Filip Ude. He's not a million miles away, about a third of a mark from a place on the podium. It means that yet again, Rhys McLennigan has won the European Championship title. He did it for the first time in 2018, won it again last year, and now he retains his European crown.
Absolutely fantastic there from Rhys McLennigan, and he is smiling in delight. He knows that he has got the job done, and no doubt as well will be looking ahead to the Olympic Games. It bodes very well, Alan, because he's shown brilliant form and the confidence of winning all the time.
Well, he expects it from himself as well, doesn't he? He's that good. So he's obviously going into the Olympics expecting to win a gold medal. And when you see him on that, I don't know much about pommel horsing, Marie, but he's so clinical and precise and just looked brilliant on it.
Well, Shane McGuire, we've a few months now before the Olympics come around to get into the minute detail that we need to be experts on the pommel horse, because it does look like there's a lot more to it than you'd expect just looking at it.
Yeah, look, through the kids' birthdays now, no more trampolines. I'm going to find the pommel horse.
I'm just thinking that. Can you see all the kids out doing a pommel horse in the summer, like you used to see them out playing tennis for Wimbledon?
I don't think there'd be too many of us investing in pommel horses for the back garden. They can do a few cartwheels to start off and we'll see how they go. Anyway, back to the hurling. We were chatting a little bit there about Limerick and Tipperary, and I think a bit like everybody, Shane, it's so hard to predict how it's going to go, but maybe after this weekend we'll have a better sense of really where a lot of these teams are at.
Yeah, well, Tip definitely will, Marie, because as I said, we didn't, like, no one, it was very, very hard to gauge what the team was going to be. We have the team now, and as I was saying there, you know, physically we're very strong in the half-back line, trying to match their half-forward line for strength. And I suppose what Clare did very well was they kind of shut down the Limerick half-back line for a long period of the game, but I suppose when it mattered most, they came roaring into it. Like, so I think Tip will be trying to do the same as well, you know, with likes Valentine and Garrod O'Connor there in the half forward line. So, like, everybody knows the way Limerick play, Marie, but I think it's just a testament to how good they actually are, that they don't change, and it's up to everyone else to try and figure out a way to beat them. And that's just a testament to how good they are. They're so confident in their system. They never panic. There was no panic on the sideline there, you know, in Cusick Park. There was no panic with the players. Maybe there was internally, but they just don't show it. Like, and 8-9 points down, as I said, in an inter-county game, and the second half is on 10-15 minutes, but there's still no panic. And I just think Tip, you know, when it comes to minutes 60, 61, 62, I think Tip will really know where they're at then. You know, if they're still in the game with, like, maybe 9-10 minutes to go, I think they'll know that they've done something right, because... Like, you would even take Limerick, like, I mean, that they're able to start Sean Finn now this week. You know, Mike Casey will step out, Sean Finn will come in. Like, it's just phenomenal, the strength and depth they have. Even the belief now that they have in Cahal O'Neill, they're saying to him, look, we trust you, you're going to get the job done. They're starting him again this week. Because it didn't start well for him against Clare. But they obviously do trust him. They see the talent the guy has. They say, you go again now and you do this. I'm sure Dunnick O'Dolig is absolutely chomping at the bit after coming on. Could have scored 2 goals and a point. Got his 1-1. Was made a big difference when he came on. So they're just putting pressure on the regular guys. And look, it's very hard for the rest of us trying to compete with the talent they have at the moment. They just have an exceptional group. They may never see it again, but they're enjoying it now and they're dead right to. And I just think Tip, if you can just go man and man, will they be brave and go man and man with them, or sit back and cut off the space front to Galan? I'd say they'll be brave and they'll go for it. And they'll just trust the boys in the full back line, like Craig Morgan coming back in there and Ronan's there and Johnny Ryan. Just trust them, lads, that they're going to win the battles. Like, because if you sit back off Limerick, like Clare kind of did, you know, Limerick went deep and Clare nearly, they just lost their shape. Limerick got on the ball and just, as I said, 3-6 to 3 points demolished them. So I just think, as a Tip hurling person, I think everyone's just looking for a good, really good performance. think Limerick are favoured to win the match by maybe 6-7 points. So, you know, even those kind of things, when you see those things, that you just feel that the bit of pride that's always going to be there with Tip Hurling, that's going to come out, you know, and just give a really good performance. But, you know, being honest, my heart would say obviously Tip, but I just still think Limerick, with what they did last week, the final quarter being their strongest quarter in the game, it's hard to see him getting overturned in the Gaelic Crowns. I hope I'm wrong, but it's hard to see it for me.
In ways, we're kind of nearly looking all the time for the challenger to Limerick, and when you look at a game like Galway and Kilkenny as well, obviously the game will be good, but you're just wondering, have they improved? Have they upped it? Have they reached that level where they will be contenders? Out of the two of them, where do you think that those two teams are at, Shane?
Yeah, they didn't really learn much from the first round, really, to be honest. You know, they both had handy wins, Kilkenny over Antrim, Galway, albeit a bit closer with Carlow. But I mean, for Kilkenny, there was nearly more negatives than positives because, like, say, Owen Cody picked up an injury. You know, he's going to be out for 5 or 6 weeks. Adrian Mullins not featuring this week. Don't see Owen Murphy talking out. Maybe they're just giving, like, say, Aidan Tallis and these guys, you know, just giving them some championship experience. And what a great championship experience it is to play above in Salt Hill against Galway, you know, top two teams in Leinster. So I think Kilkenny are a weakened team. Like, you know, their full back line is probably their strongest line on the pitch, like Mikey Butler, Hugh Lawler and Tommy Walsh. Like TJ up in the forwards, you know, with all due respect to all those around him, Mossy Keown and John Donnelly and Tom Phelan and even Billy Ryan on wall, like TJ is the one marquee forward that Kilkenny have right now in the absence of Adrian Mullen and Owen Cody, both his clubmates actually, which, you know, is unreal to think of how good Ballyhale are like. But, you know, I just think if Galway, this is their chance, like, you know, not their chance, but this is a great opportunity for them to kind of send out a message themselves. They're at home, you know, their manager as well and everything. If you could just freeze frame anything, Marie, if they just freeze frame that feeling they had at the end of the Leinster final last year, when they just threw it away and the hurt from that has to be a motivating factor for them as well. And while this won't define Leinster, whoever loses this, I just think it's a great opportunity for Galway. Like, I mean, I'm even looking at their full forward line is one of the best full forward lines in the country if they get the ball in Conor Whelan, Conor Cooney and Cathal Mannion. And I just think them two lines alone, the Kilkenny full back line and the Galway full forward line should be a brilliant battle as well. But I just feel Galway, they're a stronger team. They have more to pick from, not as many injuries as Kilkenny do. And I just think, you know, even the likes of Johnny Glynn is named on the bench, Marie. And for people who might know about Johnny Glynn, like, Johnny Glynn is living in New York. He had a great club championship last year in Galway. He's back over now. He's been training with the group. He went on a training camp with them. And even him, like, he's a crowd favourite. And if he came on the field, they'd lift the crowd to give. So, look, all those factors, Marie. I really feel that this will be Galway's victory on Sunday in Salt Hill.
Okay, either way, it'll be a good weekend, I think, of hurling anyway, and hopefully the weather will stay good because it always helps. Shane McGrath, thank you for your hurling and pommel horse contributions this evening. Very valuable, both of them.
Cheers, Ned.
See you,
Shane. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good weekend. We're going to take a break, but just before I do, there is some news to bring you. So more good news this evening. Ireland's Róisín Éireann has won her fourth medal at the European Para Swimming Championships at Madeira, taking bronze in the 400-metre freestyle. Barry McClements is going to go in the 100-metre backstroke just before 7:30. And then fresh off the back of her gold medal last night, Nicole Turner is going to line up in the 100-metre breaststroke final at 7:34. So hopefully more medals all round as well. And for anyone just joining us, Rhys McLennigan has won gold at the European Championships in the pommel horse final.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We are going to turn our attention now to Gaelic football, and Brendan Devenny joins us on the line ahead of what is a very interesting weekend ahead. How are you, Brendan?
I'm the best, Marie. Yourself?
You're the best. That's lovely, isn't it?
You are the best, Brendan. You are the best.
Simply the best. Oh, no, I can't think of that. Sorry, I'll get in trouble when we get over friends for that line.
Good effort, I like it. So this weekend, lots going on, but Donegal and Tyrone is going to be the one that's going to take centre stage. So what's the mood like up around Donegal, Brendan Devenny?
Yeah, it's great. Listen, great in Ulster. Marie, listen, come to Ulster, we will save the championship. Listen, our two semi-finalists from last year, Monaghan and Derry, both gone at the first hurdle. They're already out of Ulster. That's what happens. We need to drop Dublin and Kerry, I think, in intravenous years, throw them on the Ulster Champions Series. That's an argument for another day. But yeah, from a Donegal perspective, Marie, yeah, listen, really, really excited. It's back to Celtic Park, coming thick and fast. And as you say, it was very interesting after the pitch out. There was such a buzz from the Donegal people, you know, went in as underdogs, you know, and outsmarted Derry. The game plan was first class, carried out to a man. And, you know, you've seen the next day Tyrone having to go through extra time, you know, a lot of bodies cramped up and a few injuries in there. So, you know, I think Kennedy had a dead leg. There's word of Kilpatrick being back, but certainly you could see from Brian Duher's reaction, get off the pitch, get ready, because it's such a quick turnaround. How much effect that has on Tyrone, it's hard to know, Marie, but certainly watch analysing the Donegal play. You know, that's a difficult conundrum to go and beat this Donegal side when they play like they did against Derry.
So matchups, what are you looking forward to most? Who are you looking forward to watching most?
Well, listen, Marie, if you look at the last day, the brilliance, of course, of Jason McGee in midfield, the way he took out Conor Glass. I think Conor Glass touched the ball six times, Marie. So, you know, he was being talked about as the best player midfielder in Ireland at that point. And of course, people can have an off day, but certainly the way Donegal upped their game. I suppose Brendan McCall, Dara Canavan's a massive... McCall had missed four games. You thought maybe he'd be a bit rusty. Marcus McGuigan, you know, McGuigan didn't really score, got a couple of scores late on when the game was over. Really took him out of the game. I suppose Langan, if Kennedy makes it, his battle will be interesting. Hampsey, of course, who got the black card. You know, when Tyrone sat deep, and this is, I suppose, the worry for Tyrone, Kevin still got in and got the goals and put them back in the game. Now, Hampsey was off, but he still had enough men back there. He'll have a good battle with the likes of Oisin Gallen, I suppose. Then Niall O'Donnell, Michael McKiernan will have a bit of a ding-dong, you know, players like that. So, you know, I think it's more of a Donegal, the way they're playing. They're playing with basically seven half-forwards in there. They get into their defensive shape, they're hard to break down, and when they break with unbelievable pace. And say the likes of Ryan McHugh there, you would think he's back in his early years with Donegal. The energy that he's put into the game and up the pitch, and of course Patton's kick-outs, and of course Patton is a bit of an injury worry from a Donegal perspective as well, whether he starts or not. So it'll be interesting just to see exactly who does take the pitch. Patrick Birdie has that sub appearance under his belt. Does he get a starting berth or not? So yeah, a lot of interest going into this one, Marie, for sure.
What about the other game, the other semi-final down in Armagh? It'll be well over by the time that one rolls around on Sunday, 5:15 on Saturday. These two teams met last year. Armagh came out on top. No doubt Down will learn a lot from that one though.
Yeah, certainly, Marie. Listen, Down are the best team in Division 3. There's no doubt in that. Now, they've had two poor performances against Westmeath in the final and against Antrim. And a lot of people are question marking, where is this Down team going now? It looked like they were an up and up. Your big fear is, as you said, they conceded four goals to Armagh last year, and Armagh's physical power and strength is on another level. And as do most teams, but Down would be quite small in terms of the men that they're putting out there. You know, Turbot and Murn inside, you know, Cotterdy. You know, even big midfielders, Creeley and Macken, you know, you don't even need to put O'Neill in. I think he'll provide ammunition out the pitch. And that is a bit of a worry. That said, obviously, you know, last year, Down's big game in the Tailteann was beating Cavan, and it really started their season when they were written off. They had two poor performances before that. So, listen, if they can see goals, maybe they're going to get beat. And as you've seen last week, Donegal shut out. Derry didn't even have a goal opportunity. Donegal had about six or seven. So I think therein is the difference. If they can set, huge job for McAvoy at fullback for Down. If they can keep out goals and stay in the game a bit, I think that's the most that Down fans can hope for. But there's certainly not a lot of hope in Down currently.
So who's going to be contesting the Ulster final?
It looks like our friends from Armagh are going to be back in. No, Marie, there was a time there we couldn't beat them with Clonus, and now they're having trouble getting across the line in big games there, and it's been going on and on and on. Listen, there's no doubt there's been progression there with McGeaney, and if you look at his backroom team, Connolly's Gilligan and McGeever, but both coached them down and would have known so much about them, and you just think there's Armagh been so close to a lot of things. And even the league final against Donegal, to me they underperformed in many ways, and we haven't seen the best of them. When they go for teams like they did with Fermanagh, They've got so much power. So, you know, I think it's going to be an Armagh Donegal final.
And what about Leinster then? Kildare Louth in one semi and Dublin Offaly in the other.
Yeah, listen, what Kildare team is going to turn up, Marie? That is the question. I think, you know, I mean, Mick O'Grady and Daniel Flynn have recovered from injuries against Wexford. You know, obviously, they've got Kevin Flynn is suspended, and he had a straight red card. You know, that the Louth team, I just really like what Jerry Brenn's doing, obviously, from Mickey Hart's time there. He's pushed it on. You know, the day I seen him against Donegal, they were very well defensively set up, you know, and they really could have caused a shock that day. And then going forward, you know, Mulroy and Burns, I mean, last year's semi-final, Downey kicked 7 points. And history beckons for Louth. They've never been in back-to-back Leinster finals. And the way it is now, Marie, I think getting the Leinster final probably deserves a prize because you're not going to get the ultimate one. That's going to lie with the Dubs coming down the track. So this is a massive game. Kildare, Marie, have tried to play a bit of modern football. They're dropping players back, but they're still too easy cut through. You know, the next dream team of a backroom team in terms of Kildare legends there, you just won't wonder about the pedigree. There's just something about Jerry Brennan and his team. I know former Kildare midfielder David White is in there as well, so they'll know everything about Kildare. And you know, they beat them in the league by 5 points earlier, so you'd have to say it's very much advantage Louth. That said, Kildare have it in them. What Kildare team turns up, we don't know.
And Dublin Offaly?
Yeah, listen, mate, what do you say about this one? As I said, the Dubs, you know, rolled into this. I was thinking the last time they met was 2007 and it was 112 to 10 points. Well, I'll tell you what, if Louth or if Offaly could out there with that scoreline this time, they'd be lucky. I mean, posted 319 against Meath. Meath only had 12. And listen, Meath operating above Offaly. I mean, let's be honest, Offaly beat two teams this year in the league. It was Wicklow and Limerick. I mean, that is the task that's coming up against them. You know, talking to the Offaly guys, it seems with some of these Leinster teams now, it's generational. They need a huge crop of players to come through together and try and work off that. But listen, this is just, it's another annihilation. It's no really good for anybody, Dublin as well. So it's a tough one to know what to take out of it for Offaly. They'll just try and get out of there with as least of a hammering as they can get and build onto the Telchin.
Okay, Brendan Devaney, enjoy the weekend. Should be a cracker. We'll have lots to talk about next week, but should be good. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, mate.
Talk to you soon.
See you, Brendan.
Right, time for another quick break. Do stay with us, though. We will be looking ahead to all of the weekend's Premier League action and also be talking racing with Jane Mangan, so stay tuned.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Rhys McClenaghan has retained his European Championship pommel horse title, winning gold at the event in Italy. So fair play to Rhys, who always delivers on the big stage. Not an easy thing to do. Alan Cawley is with me in studio and Fergal Brennan's on the line. We're going to be talking all things Premier League in just a moment. But Al, before we do, just want to check in on the League of Ireland. Another big round of fixtures. Where are you heading?
Talca Park tonight, Shelburne and St Pat's, Marie. And Shelburne, to be fair, obviously in the headlines during the week for Damien Duff's comments about Shane Farrell and stuff. But more importantly, I think they got back on track with the performance against Shamrock Rovers. And I think the line he used after the match was, "We have our team back," because they did hit a little bit of a blip the previous three games. They only picked up 1 point out of nine. Couple of defeats as well, which obviously were surprising off the back of the brilliant start that they've had. So to put in the performance they did against Shamrock Rovers, albeit Shamrock Rovers had a couple of injuries, the pitch isn't great in Talca Park. That would be a concern for me. It's dreadful, to be honest with you, Marie, and it's not acceptable really at this stage. You're talking about elite level football and we're still talking about pitches being poor, and in particular Talca Park was very, very poor. But just in terms of the football side, I suppose they did get back on track. They're playing St Pat's tonight. John Daly's under a bit of pressure as well. Things are not going great this season for him, so I fancy Shelburne to beat them.
Okay, Alan, thank you for that. We're going to turn now to the Premier League. Fergal Brennan is with us. So Fergal, Alan mentioned that Damien Duff got his team back. Well, he said he got his team back. Any chance that Jurgen Klopp's going to get his team back before the end of the season, do you think?
I think they owe it to him between now and the end of the campaign. I was at his press conference this morning and he effectively said that the Derby defeat to Everton in midweek was the most disappointing and frustrating result of his career. He didn't specify whether that was just Liverpool or his full career. And he looks, I would say, from all the years I've been covering him as Liverpool manager, he looks as defeated as I've ever seen him. The last few weeks they've gone from being in a position to fighting across multiple fronts to they're now needing an absolutely impossible swing in their favour from Man City and Arsenal both dropping points to get themselves back in the title race. he himself said that's just not going to happen, and I'd be inclined to agree with him. It's a very strange end, considering how successful and how iconic he's been for Liverpool. The players have got this last block of games, these last four Premier League games, to give him a boost as he signs off as Liverpool manager, but he won't be taking another trophy. And that feels so strange when you think back to, as I say, a month ago, the expectation was that he'd win at least one, be that the FA Cup, Europa League, or potentially even the Premier League title. It's now going to be nothing, and it's a very, very strange and disappointing end for him.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost like, as well, that the conversation's moved on now, and it's Arnie Slot and what kind of manager he's going to be, and what does Klopp think of him, and when's the deal going to be done. And it does seem like it's edging closer to being finalised, Fergal.
Yeah, he was actually asked about it in his press conference today, and he was very kind of straightforward about it. Obviously, he said he's not involved in the process of appointing a successor, but he was quite positive about Arne Slot, the football that he plays, the type of person that he is. And that's going to be an important aspect of whoever replaces Jurgen Klopp. The likelihood at the moment is that it will be Arne Slot, because almost the cult of personality that Klopp has created around himself as Liverpool manager, that will need to be replaced, as much as the manager and the leader of the team will be for next season. There is still a few bits to be thrashed out with Feyenoord. There's a compensation package to be put together. But even Slot himself has said, yes, I want the job, and hopefully the two clubs can agree something. I don't think it will get wrapped up until the end of the season. I think the club's position on Klopp will be, let the season run its course, let him have his sign off, and then Slot will be moved in, unless there's another major twist. But it was just a very odd vibe at the press conference today, with Klopp being asked about the guy that's going to be stepping in, and obviously on the back of the Derby loss and the situation that they find themselves in the title race.
It just goes to show, Marie, the ruthless nature of football, that Klopp is almost yesterday's man already. And that's the reality of it. You know, time moves on. No club, no individual is bigger than any club, especially Liverpool. And he will be forgotten, albeit he's done an unbelievable job. But I just wonder, Fergal, even just in terms of, I suppose, the general consensus around Merseyside, is there anyone questioning the timing of Klopp's announcement? I know Wayne Rooney mentioned it the other night on the coverage. I've had one individual over here mention it, and he said it at the very time, who is obviously involved in high level sport, and he questioned it over here to me, just ourselves. But I just wonder, is anyone looking back now thinking, could he have held on, or was the timing wrong? Because it almost felt as if we have to win something now for him, whereas I thought Jamie Carragher summed it up very well after the match, that if Klopp wasn't leaving, you'd be looking at this Liverpool thinking, this is a team that's building for the future.
The difficulty is, anyone that is saying it now is kind of being criticised, unless they said it when he announced it and said that this will be a long-term issue. The majority of people that I've spoken to or who've made that comment now are saying it on the back of the last few weeks. But if you go back to when he announced it, there was that massive kind of swell of rallying behind him, and they were really, really impressive for a few weeks, and it looked as if there was going to be this big grand finale. So there is some people making that point, but I think a lot of them are finding themselves in a position of maybe being talked out of it because they didn't make it the point when they maybe should have made it. They're only making it now because of how the results have been reflected. And if the results had gone in a different way in the last few weeks, they wouldn't be saying it. So it's a difficult one to gauge how genuinely many people believe it. If it was the position of certain people when he made the announcement, then yes, they're more than entitled to that point of view. But I think it will be a bit fickle for people to kind of say it now when they were performing so well and punching to win four trophies, and then it's all just gone in the complete opposite direction.
The big one this weekend, Spurs and Arsenal. And look, we've said it I don't know how many times at this stage, Fergal, but Arsenal just need to keep winning every game.
Yeah, there's no other way around it. And Mikel Arteta, he's added a bit more steel to this Arsenal team. We saw with the Bayern Munich game that there's still a way for them to go. They've answered a lot of their questions that have been put forward to them, but at the very top of European football, there's still a bit of work to go. Otherwise, they'd still be in the Champions League. But I think these types of games in the past, there'd be real doubt and concern from an Arsenal perspective. That's not to say that they think they're going to walk it. Tottenham are a huge rival. They're still pushing for Champions League qualification. But there's the feel about Arteta, and particularly the reaction after losing to Munich, beating Wolves and then hammering Chelsea in midweek, that this game is there for the taking. Arteta's got a really good recent record. I think he's won four of his last six in this game. They were quite unfortunate to draw with Spurs earlier on this season. I think they were 2-0 up and then two quick goals and it ended up as a draw. And it's difficult to guess how Tottenham are going to be. They've had, I think, 14, 15 days off because they've not been involved in the Cups and there's been a bit of a kind of glitch in the fixture calendar. How are they going to respond? Will the break do them good or will they maybe be a little bit rusty up against an Arsenal team that are banging form and definitely have something to fight for?
Arsenal have been absolutely phenomenal, Marie, as have Liverpool, because when you look at City, the last 18 matches, they've won 14 and drawn 4. Arsenal have won 14 in their last 14 matches, they've won 12. They had the draw against Man City, which everybody said was a good result. I felt that myself away from them, and they had one bad half against Aston Villa. It just goes to show the standards of what Man City are doing now, that the other teams can barely afford the odd defeat. Like, even a draw looks like a bad result, and it's slightly unfair on them, I think, because even though Liverpool, who I never really felt were going to win the league, the way they've performed to just go toe-to-toe at Man City for as long as they have has been incredible. Arsenal, I think, are slightly better than Liverpool and ahead of them, and they'll push them a little bit further, as we're seeing at the moment. But they've been unbelievable, Arsenal, as well. It's just unfortunate for them that Man City are just so good.
That's the way it is. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much as always for joining us. We'll check in with you again next week. We're going to turn our attention to racing. Jane Mangan joins us on the line. Jane, the Premier League is coming to an end, but so is the Trainers' Championship and the Jockey Championship as well.
Yes, I suppose we're all fixated on what's happening at Sandown tomorrow, because Willie Mullins is on the verge of history, not since the great Vincent O'Brien over 70 years ago has an Irish trainer put their hands on the British Trainers' Championship. And to do the double, to win both the Irish and the English, will be he'll be only the second man ever to do it. He is currently in front of, I think it is fair to say at this stage, it would be a massive shock if he didn't cross the line in front tomorrow, the last day of the season in the UK. And William Mullins is sending across a formidable team just to ensure that there is no late surprises. Of course, El Fabiolo will be top of the list. He takes on John Bonn in the celebration chase. But guys, in the realm of sport, I find him hard to compare to anybody else, because he's not just managing a team of people. What he's done with his horses this season is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, Jane, so this weekend, what does he need to do? How many does he need to win? What does he need to come home with?
Well, I think that there's £675,000 up for grabs tomorrow. So he has a lead of around 180 grand. He'll need to sustain that by bagging one or two of the big races. So as I said, El Fabiolo is in against John Bonn and Edward Stone in the big race tomorrow. That is the celebration chase. He has a number of other runners. He's got Easy Game in the Oaksy chase against The Real Whacker and Hitman. That he's actually going to be a big enough price, because he's not expected to win that. There's also a very good hurdle race there. Paul Townend, of course, because he's in his own battle over here, he's going to have to sacrifice tomorrow. So he's going to have to miss a day's racing tomorrow in Ireland to ride the likes of El Fabiolo. And, of course, Nick Rocket goes across to run in the Bet365 Gold Cup. It is worth mentioning as well, the William Mullins isn't the only man trying to bring home some sterling tomorrow. Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore are sending over Am I Right for that 3.5 mile contest, the Grade 3 handicap as well. So Ampere Pass will be top of many people's lists. Bally Adam for Henry de Bromhead. Sir Gerhard, Patrick Mullins on the score sheet in Scotland again today. They're all, they're all going to be vying for major prize money. But Dan Skelton and Paul Nicholls, while they have had a great season, they have not won 9 Cheltenham Festival races. They have not won an Aintree Grand National, and they have not won a Scottish National. And I think last week, when Danny Mullins crossed the line, when they got the bob of the head in the photo finish, I think that really sealed the deal. That luck was on Willie Mullins' side.
So before we move on to the Jockeys' Championship and how that's going to fare out over the next little while, anything else from a racing perspective we need to look at, Jane?
Well, of course, we're looking ahead to Punchestown. The next time I speak to you, we'll be well underway at Punchestown. It looks like Galopin Deschamps will contest next Wednesday's Punchestown Gold Cup, likely to be taken on by Nicky Henderson's Shishkin, the reopposing last year's champion in Punchestown Fastest Low, and the prospect of a possible Carrick Rambler coming over. I'll be there from Tuesday to Saturday on RTE with Ruby and all the team. I think Stateman will be a very, very short price in the Punchestown Champion Hurdle. But if the weather stays good, guys, there will be no better day out than if you can make it to Punchestown next week. It's the curtain call for the National Hunt season, and what a season it has been.
And Jane, what about the Jockeys Championship? Who do you think is going to win that one?
Well, I think Jack Kennedy is going to have to go into Punchestown with a double-figure lead, because last year Paul Tannen rode 11 winners, and he's going to have a couple of penalty kicks. The likes of the Lossie Mouth in the Mayor's Hurdle, the likes of Cargazy in the four-year-old hurdle, the likes of Stateman as well, they're all going to be tremendously difficult to beat. But Jack was on the score sheet today at Downpatrick. He's already had a winner, so he's now 7 winners clear of Paul Tannen, who of course misses tomorrow. So Jack is etching away, and it is notable Jack has made a concerted effort all season, whereas Paul hasn't ridden a winner for any other trainer other than Willie Mullins. So credit to Jack. He's been second to Paul in the Champion Hurdle. He's been second to him in the Gold Cup. He's finished second to him in the International. God forbid if he gets caught in the Jockeys Championship, it will be the season of seconds.
It really will. Jane, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll be talking to you again soon. That is all we have time for this evening. It is set to be another super weekend of sport, and hopefully some good weather as well. So do get out and enjoy it. The official chart show with Blana Tracy is up next. RTE 2FM.